brothers and sisters. Hopefully everybody's staying good and cool out there, because it has been hot as shit the last few days here in Southwest Lower Michigan. Our guest today, Chuck Gooding. This dude, his energy was amazing. As soon as he came in the room, he just made you want to smile. He was so much fun to sit down with and talk turkeys. He's got such a cool story. The dude is one bird away from his turkey grand slam in a single season. Impressive, right? In a single season. One thing I got to warn you about is the sound quality. I could go through what happened, but basically I screwed up, and the whole episode is recorded off the computer mic instead of these fancy microphones that we usually use. So it sounds a little weird, but it only takes you a couple minutes to get used to it. Surprisingly, it turned out a lot better than I thought it should have. But thank goodness, because this was such a fun episode. So without further ado, Chuck Gooding.
All right, so we are live, folks. We're sitting here in Ray Cole's garage once again without Ray Cole. He is at a baseball game. Funny thing about kids is they like to play sports, and
you kind of have to be there
for them. Yeah, kind of got to be there for them, especially when you're the coach. So.
Right. Or the dad, you know.
Yeah.
Or, double duty there.
In his case, both.
Right.
So that's where he's at. He'll be joining us a little bit later. Al Cole is also sitting here with us today.
How's it going?
We're going to talk about how his season went. And our special guest today, Charles Gooding. How you doing, man?
Good. Very good. Glad to be here.
Now, I just realized I have two beers open at this point.
Right.
Smooth.
You can handle it.
Yeah, I'm double-fisted, I guess. It's another late recording. You guys all remember how episode 4 went, but we're a little bit well behaved this time. We're going to try to be.
Still late in the evening, but we're going to get through it.
Right. Now, Charles, you are one bird away from what slam now? The Grand Slam?
A Grand Slam for this year. I've got it for my lifetime, and if I can get a Miriam's out in Wyoming over the next couple days, I'll have it for this year.
Now, for the people that don't know, what is a turkey slam?
Okay, there's four subspecies of turkeys in the United States. The Osceola out of Florida,
right.
The Eastern, which we're all familiar with in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Rio Grande is out in the southwest and western right. states, and then a Miriam's is out in the western states and Nebraska also.
Okay.
And if you get one of each one of those subspecies, you've got a Grand Slam. And then you can also go for a Royal Slam, which is one other subspecies of Gould's, which is only available in New Mexico and parts of Arizona, but only through drawing. And they're pretty tough to get. Or you can go to Mexico and get them down there. Or the third option is to go for a Royal Slam and also get those five plus an oscillated turkey, which is only available in Mexico.
Wow, so it's a lot of legwork either way. It's,
oh yeah. Now the oscillated, that doesn't look like your average turkey, you know. From the pictures I've seen, they're have you seen one, Adam?
I'm not familiar, no.
They almost look like a peacock. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean they're real bright.
Are they the ones that look like the teal color and they got the real bright like a peacock, like that,
yep.
that kind of aquamarine color to them, and do they have a different color beak, or is that
I don't know about the beak.
I'm not sure either. I know they don't gobble, they whistle.
Right. Yeah. So. And those are the ones that are only...
Really? Mm-hmm. Say whistle, huh?
They're only available in the Southwest, is that right?
No, those are only available in Mexico.
Okay.
You've got to go across the border to get those.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a World Slam?
That's a World Slam.
Yeah.
That's the work you have to put in just to get, you know, a turkey slam, mm-hmm. and then to have these different subsets to it and to all the time... and money and traveling that you have to do to get that. That's definitely something that I have a lot of respect for.
And you're one bird
fantastic.
Away.
Fantastic.
I'm one bird away for the year.
For
the year.
Yeah. And I've done mine a little bit. A lot of guys will go out and do it on their own, on all private land. Or, excuse me, all public land.
Right.
And get them. I've generally gone with outfitters. Now, my Easterns I didn't because we've got them. They're fairly common around here, but... My Osceola, I went to a place in Florida with an outfitter
right.
and had a guide. I did the same thing in Kansas, did the same thing in Nebraska, and I've got an outfitter lined up out there. And my reasoning is I've got limited time to go for a bird when I go out somewhere. I don't want to go out and be scouting and spending weeks at a time trying to find out where I'd be hunting, finding land.
Yeah, we talked about that before.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can still do it. I mean, people do it all the time. It's just a matter of...
It takes a lot more time and a lot more prep. To be able to have
yes.
an experience like that. And for my money, I don't find anything wrong with hiring a guide to do something like that. If you're spending the time and the money just to travel across the entire country to do it, why not maximize your opportunity?
Yep. And I'm assuming it'd be nice to kind of have somebody to show you how to turkey hunt. I mean, if you're just beginning, you know, to have somebody go out there, a guide call for you, you know. I mean, there's no better way to learn than actually being out there next to somebody doing it.
Well, and the guide spends his whole spring scouting for birds, looking for birds. You know, we went to Kansas 2 weeks ago, and we go out in the first morning. It's daylight at 6:30. At 7:15, we've got two toms standing right in front of us, in front of the, you know, you still got to shoot them.
Right, right.
But it nonetheless, it helps.
It helps having somebody put in the legwork to do a little bit of the research so that they can put you in the right spot to maximize your opportunity, especially if you're going to spend the money to do it. You
know? Right, and what I've realized this season is turkey hunting is different than deer season, you know, because we get October 1st to January 1st.
Right.
To basically, I mean, you could technically get away without really doing any scouting, find a deer run, snuggle up next to a tree.
Right.
And then eventually, you know, throughout the season, kind of get a good idea where them deer are moving through them woods and set up and adjust. You get a week.
Right.
Well, unless you get the late season in Michigan, then you get pretty much a whole month.
Well, we talked about it too.
But by then, you know, they're kind of done.
The difference between turkey hunting and deer hunting is turkey hunting, you can't pattern the turkey the same way that you can pattern a deer. A deer is going to bed down in the same area usually every night, you know, travel the same path or whatever. A turkey, they get up and they move all day long until it gets dark enough for them to roost. And it's wherever they end up is where they're going to be. So
I've come to realize the roosting sites are pretty important.
Yeah.
At least, they helped me out big time. Once I found out where they were roosting, it made everything a little easier. Right. And just to kind of plan for that in the mornings. But, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't, right?
Right. And then we're talking about, you know, the time scouting and everything. It's also, your season's a week long.
Right.
You don't get unless you take the whole week off work, which I didn't do. So I got to go out.
I didn't take any time off
4 days. And it was kind of hit or miss. Like, I'd go off for a couple hours and then.
Right, which a lot of people probably get to. You know, everybody's got to work. Or if you're fortunate enough to be retired and not have to work, then maybe you get to spend your time chasing turkeys across the country, which is an awesome thing. That's the culmination of the American dream there.
That is awesome. So, now, what's the difference between. All right, so everybody knows the eastern turkey, the eastern wild turkey is pretty much, when you think wild turkey, that's what you're thinking of. Now, the oscillated, how does that just differ from the oscillated? Osceola, I'm sorry.
Osceola.
I misspoke. Yep.
The Osceola is a little bit smaller, a little bit longer leg. They like the cypress hammocks in the swamps down in Florida. And you've only got them in one area of Florida, too. It's in southern Florida.
Okay.
They're maybe not as quite as vocal as the Easterns are, but the birds I've experienced down there are a lot more aggressive than what the Easterns are.
Like as far as decoys?
Decoys or just coming just, into a
just the way
coming
they
into
move
a
around
call, the way they
move.
Gotcha. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But again, I've had limited experience with them. I mean, I've had them one time and and took my time early in the morning, so
Now, ghouls. Anything special about them compared to an Eastern? Or?
Well, the only thing about a ghouls is the fact, and again, that's a subspecies I'm not familiar with at all, because you've got to enter in a draw in either New Mexico or Mexico, New Mexico or Arizona, and then you've got to get picked. And like I said earlier, I put in for the draw in Arizona for 4 years now, and I'm no closer than I was the first time I drew for it. But they're a bird, they're in one special area of the mountains, and they're pretty much a mountainous bird as far as I understand. So you're going to do some hiking, and you're going to do some hiking at fairly high altitudes to go for them.
Now, I imagine the Miriams are kind of the same way, because they're high altitude, right? Or no?
Miriams are high altitude the majority of the time, although we got them down right on farmland in Nebraska. And they're a bird, they tend to flock a little bit later than when we hunted in April. I think we were out in Nebraska for opening day a number of years ago, and we had a flock of about probably 60 birds come walking past us going headed for a feedlot.
Oh.
But they stay locked up, but we'll see what happens over the next couple of days, like I say, because I'll be hunting Miriams out there. But they say they're a bird of the high altitudes, and they like the ponderosa pine forest.
Yeah.
Some of that.
And are all their diets kind of, I mean, basically the same?
Well, it depends on where they're at. Easterns eat a lot of nuts and a lot of whatever they can find in the fields.
Right, more of a forage sort of animal.
Yes. Osceolas eat a lot more snakes, crawfish, things related to the water because they're around that a lot and things like that. Merriams, I think, will eat about anything, but they're probably eating a lot more pine nuts and things like that that they're finding up at higher altitudes. And then the rios hunt or eat probably, I would say, similar to what the easterns do. They don't have as many nuts as we do, but a lot more grains.
Hey, where would you say the rios are?
Rios, we hunted in Kansas. Rios are real big in Texas. And there they live in amongst the cactus and in the in with the cattle and stuff like that. So they're more open country bird.
Okay. Flatlands and how many easterns have you killed this year? Because you had Indiana and Michigan, right?
This year I've got two easterns. I killed a bird in Michigan on opening day in Michigan, and 2 days later killed a bird on opening day in Indiana.
Congratulations, that's awesome. That's
I got lucky on both of them.
Well, and you're going to New York to hunt easterns?
I go to New York when I get back from Wyoming for 3 days to hunt easterns, yeah.
Like anything else, awesome, there's a certain amount of luck associated with hunting. It doesn't hurt to be lucky if you can help it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. There's all sorts of traditions and superstitions, and I know I have a ritual myself for opening day, which we'll get into at a different point in time, but there's a lot of weird things that people do to get ready for hunting.
Oh my God, yeah.
Do you have any turkey rituals that you do? Do you have any good luck charms or?
No, not really.
Preparedness and?
Not really. Just get out in the woods early and, you know, be ready for them.
Here's what I want to know, because this will make me feel better. How about your missus? I know you're going to have some misses in there.
Oh, I've got a lot of misses.
I feel like this is going to lead into the turkey recap here.
I've got a lot of misses. My first miss was on the first bird I ever drew down on. I had a Remington 870 special purpose turkey. Now, that's been 2001, 2002.
Special purpose turkey, yeah.
A turkey gun was when they came up. Okay. I don't think they even make it anymore, but which they shouldn't make it if they did, because it just kicked like a mule. It basically beat the hell out of me on the first bird I ever shot at. But I had a scope on it, I thought, at the time, and I didn't know anything about turkey hunting. Oh, I'll need a scope on that.
Right.
You know, so I'm trying to look through it, and I can barely see, and I don't think the scope was set up right. I missed it, but that was just a miss. My most famous one was last year in Kansas, when the son-in-law and grandson and I went out, and I had two toms at about 30 yards, and I drew down on them and was all set to shoot them, pulled the trigger, and nothing happened. We'd moved about an hour before the two toms came in, and when we moved in the truck. And when I got in the truck, I emptied my gun.
Right.
Never reloaded it.
Oh.
So here I'm trying to pull the trigger, and I've got nothing in the gun.
Yep.
So I quick pulled down, said a couple choice words, loaded the gun as fast as I could.
Sure.
And they were walking away, but they stopped. The guy I was hunting with called, and they stopped, and I shot again, but shot high. And they were both took off and were gone. Maybe. And matter of fact, my 8-year-old grandson stopped by to say goodbye to me today before I left, and before he left, he said, well, good luck hunting, Papa, and make sure you've got shells in your gun.
That's good advice. That's true.
Yeah, they let me hear about it fairly regularly.
Now you take that's the kid I see in your Facebook post. You take hunting, right?
No, the one I take hunting is Nolan. He's a little bit older. Nolan's 10. And actually, Nolan and I were out in Kansas this year, and we doubled on two birds about quarter after 7. That. He shot the first one, and I shot the second one.
His looked a little bit bigger than yours, though.
His was a lot bigger than mine. But in all fairness to me, we decided he was going to take first shot, and his dad was in the blind with us, and his dad kept going, Nolan, shoot the bird on the left, shoot the bird on the right. No, now he's on the right.
Right.
Now he's on the left. So his dad was coaching him, and his bird was, he actually only weighed 3 pounds more than mine, but to look at him. To look at him, really? It looked like it was just a
I'll show you that picture later, right? Yeah. That bird looked a lot more than 3 pounds.
It was a moose compared to the one I shot. And the one I shot was 21 pounds.
Oh, so that was no slouch.
No, it was a good size reel.
Nice.
Yep.
And you said your wife got her first turkey this year?
My wife got a Jake about a week ago. Yep. Took her out. And she'd missed on two Osceolas in Florida. And then we came up and I got her, and she missed on a bird up here that apparently was a ways out for a shoot. And then we had a Jake come in, and she shot him at about 25 yards and dropped him like a rock.
Did you call him in for her?
Yeah.
Man, that's a lot of fun. Yeah. Isn't it? God.
Yeah.
I'm trying to wait for Ray before we get into our, because Ray actually hunted with me opening morning.
Okay.
We started on separate properties, and then when all the fun began, we were together. So I'm trying to wait on that. But this guy over here, Mr. Alan Cole, this was his first thing. Your first time hunting anything, right?
Anything. Yep. I've never hunted anything in my life until this past week.
And you decided to take up turkey hunting as the...
Yeah, it seemed...
The initial foray there.
It seemed exciting.
It is exciting.
Like watching videos and learning about it, it seemed like something that would be a good, you know...
Easy thing to get into.
Yeah, something to just wet my beak, so to speak.
Well, like you think it's kind of like squirrel hunting with kids, you know? Right. It's kind of an easier thing to take them out. Sit by a tree.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy at work today about hunting squirrels and how that is... And for me, it was one of the easiest ways to get introduced into hunting, because as a child, deer hunting's not really that exciting. You know, for a kid, you can't sit still for hours and hours and hours at a time. So squirrel hunting and rabbit hunting and small game hunting has kind of been that in between. You know, I loved shooting guns as a kid. I loved hunting, but to be interested in hunting, I had to have that action. You know, squirrel hunting or rabbit hunting.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I'm just curious. Did you start small game hunting with a shotgun or a 22?
A shotgun.
Okay.
Started off with a 20 gauge.
Okay.
I was probably 8 years old.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yep.
All right. So, your season. How'd that go? You had the second season.
Yeah.
April 29th?
The 30th of May 6th.
Okay.
April 30th to May 6th. I don't know, it was a tale of two cities. It was the best of times and it was the worst of times. We went Monday. Bert took me out Monday after I got off work. And he was calling.
Right.
And we had some hens come in. They parked back there and just made noises and kind of irritated me. Like, where's
your boyfriend? Hurt a little bit, scratching a little bit.
Where's your boyfriend at? I can't shoot you.
Right. When you guys started, did you have any idea where the birds were? Did you guys just go in and start calling? Or?
No, see, I hunted the week before that. Was my season.
So you were on the same property?
Same property. So I had a pretty good idea where they were roosted and hanging out during the day. Well, not really hanging out, but where they should be at that time.
Right.
But I will say it felt weird going out that late in the evening.
It was after work. It was like 5 o'clock.
By the time we finally sat down, it was close to five.
Now,
for me, I just the woods felt different.
Yeah.
Like when you're out in the morning, you're just listening to all the chirps of all the biodiversity out there. You know what I mean? Right. All the birds are, hey, where you at? Where you at? And in the afternoon, it's a different feel, man. It's just, that's not... I don't know. I just felt like we got out there too damn late.
There's something to be said for waking up in the woods or hearing the woods wake up around you. So I could understand if you're used to morning hunting where you get all those sounds and everything kind of coming up to speed around you, that going out there in the middle of the afternoon where they've been doing it for hours already, you know, you kind of get there in the middle of the show instead of catching the beginning of the show.
Like, well, yeah. Like 5 o'clock, it just seemed like everybody was just kind of like,
right. Yeah. I know the feeling.
But on the flip side of that, I went out Wednesday after work. I didn't get to the woods until 5:30.
Yeah.
And I scouted a little bit before. I saw the tracks. There's part where there's two trails and they fork.
Mm-hmm.
And all the tracks were leading up the one side. This is where I learned probably my biggest lesson. Like, just because you know where they've been doesn't mean you know where they're going to go.
Right.
I set my decoys up, basically had that trail in my view, straight ahead and to the left, I was clean. I had that.
Thinking that's where they're going to come from.
Yeah, started calling. He comes in from behind me
and
goes to the right.
That's
completely
typical.
The opposite way I thought he would.
Sure.
He's behind trees. Good looking bird. He showed me his tail feathers a few times, but I just couldn't get a shot, you know?
Yeah.
And we talked about it.
How far away was he?
He wasn't 30 feet away, dude.
Yeah.
He was close.
That's exciting.
And, like, when he gobbled, you could feel it in your chest.
Yeah.
Oh, my adrenaline was...
That percussion.
The first gobble I had, when I... Because me and... we sat down, and the first gobble I had, you know, I was like, oh, my God.
Right.
I remember I texted Ray, I'm like, was that a gobble?
A response.
It was... Yeah, it was a ways off, but still.
Right.
Like, holy shit, that's awesome.
It actually works.
Right. And then when they're close, that's when now I know why they call it spring thunder, man. That shit was that shit's crazy. But back to that property going so late. See, what I realized was early in the morning, it seems like the birds. Chuck, I'll ask you. So it seems like the birds fly down. And so, like, the hens, the toms, the jakes, they're all kind of in the same area, right? Are they all... Because it looked to me like I could see on the property that I couldn't get to. At early in the morning, it looked like a bunch of jakes running after a bunch of hens. I could just see a big flock going, you know, just snaking through the field, like a flock of birds running, you know?
Sure.
And then there was one tom, big bastard out there, fanning, and he just kept turning his ass. Whichever direction those hens went, he was turning his ass towards them. And I was calling and calling and calling and calling, and I could not get that tom to break off of there.
Right.
And then eventually I could see he went one direction, and they all kind of went another direction. And that was about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Now, is that normal? Is that kind of what they do? They kind of give up after a while?
When you hear that tom gobbling on the roost, he's calling those hens to him.
Right.
And he expects them hens to come to him. And a lot of times they won't fly down until they see the hens underneath them. Then they'll fly down and they'll have a strutting zone or a strutting area where they'll all walk off to where he'll strut and show off. Then he may or may not breed a couple of hens. But then those hens, by about 11:30 noon, take off and head to their nests. And that's why, and I've had real good luck this year between about 12 and 2, and I never have before. It's because those hens are gone. Those toms are alone and a couple calls, and they'll come looking for a hen.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've had the birds I got in Michigan, I got a 12, or the bird I got in Michigan came in, four of them came in at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
The bird my wife missed in Indiana came in at 2:30 in the afternoon. He was following the hen when he came in. So in the afternoon, generally those toms are by themselves. They're looking for hens.
Okay.
And that's why when you call them in the afternoon, they can come to you. The later in the day it gets, the harder it gets.
Right.
Yeah.
But I've got a field that I hunt, that I can drive by on the road and see probably a quarter of a mile back to the back of the field by the woods where the birds all come out. And I drive by there at least once a day, just looking even now.
Right.
And I'll find birds out there. It could be 10 in the morning. It could be 9 in the morning. It could be 2 in the afternoon. It could be 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But they'll wander out there all through the course of the day, walk through the field and feed, and then head back in the woods and be gone again. So they'll come out about any time.
Now, do you have a favorite time to hunt yourself? What Brent was talking about being out in the afternoon. Do you prefer the morning?
I like the morning.
Okay.
I like getting out there. I like being out there about 45 minutes, an hour before the sun comes up.
Right.
I want to hear those first cardinals start calling.
Yep.
And I've done well in the morning, but more than that, I like being out there in the morning. I'm a morning person. Yeah. I just like just the whole ambience of the woods waking up.
The atmosphere, everything going from gray to color.
Yes.
Sound coming up.
And the one field I've been hunting there, hunted quite a bit this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
With my wife is generally right about daybreak because I had a couple of hens come walking on the field. And I like shooting them, but boy, with the hens, I like just sitting there watching them walk around the field and intermingle with my decoys and stuff. And,
one of my favorite things to do, we talk about hunting as a way to harvest the game, but just being in the woods and watching these animals and their environment is a unique experience in itself. You know, if I filled my buck tag for the year, and I get to watch a little spike come through when I'm sitting in my stand in the middle of winter, you know, there's something to watching these animals in the wilderness that's just really special. And you can sit at home and watch it on TV if you want to, but to experience it, there's nothing like being there in person, in the flesh, you know, feeling the wind blow against you, smelling the pine trees or whatever, you know, getting the whole experience in, because what they show you on TV is like a highlight reel of what those people felt and expected to see, but it doesn't compare to you getting out and doing it yourself. And that's part of the mystique of hunting, especially for an animal as elusive as a turkey, mm-hmm. which we found out this year is a little easier to see sometimes than it is to get in range. And if you do get them in range, maybe you get a shot, well, maybe you don't.
He seemed pretty wise, too, because he looked down the trail.
Right.
So I know he saw I had two hens and a jake set up down there.
Right.
And he looked down there, and as soon as he looked down there, he turned and went right back over the hill and just gobbled his ass off. Like, he saw it, and he's like, you know what? You're coming to me.
Right.
I'm not going to you.
Right. He recognized it. You know, if those are real, make them come to him instead of him going to them,
yep.
which is a sign of a more experienced bird, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we're going to come back and finish your season. But before I forget, so that's crazy. So I kind of thought it was that they all fly down and it's the hens that come down and yelp and they expect the toms to come to them.
No, nope. That tom will, when you're calling a tom to come to you, mm-hmm. it's completely unnatural for them. And that's why a lot of times they'll hang up and they'll just stand there and gobble. I had a bird last year up in Michigan that right about daybreak he gobbled. So I yelped to him a couple times. He gobbled. I yelped to him a couple times. And we played that game for about 50 minutes. I had no idea that once I yelped to him, what it told him is there's a hen out here. Stay right where you're at. Wait till she walks under you. And I didn't know. I was still green enough at that.
Right. That makes perfect sense now what happened. Because we actually hunted three properties. We probably won't even talk about this when Ray gets here because it wasn't very exciting. But the last property we hunted that day... we got in there right away. Setting up, by the way, I guess is there an art to it? Because like I'm thinking deer, I need cover, I need to get to somewhere like a fallen log or something. I was hunting with a bow, so I need to have room to draw back. You know, I couldn't just lean a gun up.
Right.
But like you watch a lot of these YouTube videos and stuff, it looks like they just lean against the tree. But I realized their eyesight. Gruber wasn't joking, dude.
Yeah.
They will catch you from a ways off. So that's why it's like, so when we walk into the woods, just trying to find a place to set up, I was like, shit, Adam, this is kind of tough. I don't really know what we should do here.
Is that why guys that hunt turkeys maybe take a little more care to put like face paint on? They try.
We were all camoed up. I mean, head to toe.
Do you, when you go out, what's your camo setup? I mean, you've done it. Obviously, you're into the slamming.
I got camo clothing, mm-hmm. and I've got a camo face mask.
Okay.
And always a camo ball cap.
Right.
And I just go out and set up against a tree now. I've got a blind, a field blind, that's just a piece of material set in front of you.
Right.
But generally, I have more problems seeing over it, and it just isn't firm, so it doesn't stand up. My wife got her bird. She was sitting up against a tree. And as long as you don't move...
Well, see, that's the thing with a bow... I gotta draw back.
Right.
Okay.
So that's what I was freaking out about. And Dre was using a shotgun, so I was like, well, shit.
If you can't do it, maybe he can.
Right. So I was like, well, I'll kind of face this way, and you face that way, and then we'll call, and then if we get some goblin, and whichever way they come in, one of us will have a shot.
Sure.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
So we went out to that third property. We finally got set up. I hit the call, and it didn't take long.
Boom!
Right away, I'm like, oh, dude, this is awesome. And it didn't sound that far, but it wasn't close by any means. And it's really hilly through there, right? So we're like, shit, what do we do? Like, we just had a whole mess of experience at the other property. So, and we didn't really learn any lessons, apparently. Because I was like, what do we do? Well, then I was thinking, well, Brewer said, you know, call. If they're gobbling, and it doesn't sound like they're getting any closer, you know, kind of cut the distance in half. So I went to the edge of the ridge and set up the decoys, and we got all set up again. Called, got one gobble. On the other side, I mean, it was a different direction than he started. It sounded a little bit farther away too.
They were moving around you when you were trying to.
And then that was it.
I don't like to move.
That's where I think I screwed up, like you said.
Yep. If I'm set up and I've got my decoys out and I like the looks of my setup.
Right.
If he gobbles, I'll call him a little bit and then I'll get quiet as long as I think he's coming. But I don't like to move because I'm still green enough at it that I don't trust myself. And I know what's going to happen is I'm going to scare the hell out of him and he's going to be gone.
Right.
I think that's exactly what happened. Because like you said, like he'll gobble and he's expecting me to come to him. Right, because that was what happened. I'd call, he'd gobble, and it was like he was not moving.
Now, when you go out, are you the type of guy that will sit all day if you have to, or is it you just hunt a couple hours and you know if you don't see one or you don't get any action in a couple hours, you hang it up or
maybe your brother?
Gotta wait.
Oh, now it varies.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go out and sit. I mean, I can sit all day if I've got a spot that I know there's birds coming to.
Right.
I know I've seen them, for instance, my field in Elkhart, where I've seen them all times of the days. I'll go out there and I'll sit in one spot all day long.
Right.
Michigan, one I went up to, I knew I had a woods full of birds. So about the time I figured they'd all headed out to the fields, mm-hmm. I moved. And then they moved again, and then I moved a third time. And that was about noon, and I said, I'm going to give it to 12:30, then I'm gonna call it a day and go back out later in the afternoon.
Right.
And at quarter after 12, I heard turkey gobble. And that's when I started calling and got set in one spot and stayed there, and I had four toms come walking into me.
Huh.
So I don't know what they were doing in the woods at 12:30 in the afternoon. But
any old thing, you know, it's the joy of being in the wild is trying to understand it. And every time there's something new, something exciting, and something that you might not have seen before and might never see again.
Oh, dude, I've seen a lot of crazy shit this turkey. I didn't get to go out very much, but I've seen some crazy shit.
For 1 week.
Oh, my God, man. Well, I took the opening day off, so like I said, we hunted pretty much all day.
Yeah.
Which, man, that's the tough part. Just finding the time to get out there, because, like, it's, you know, they're on the move all day. It's not like deer where you can, like, all right, well, I got 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, or whatever.
I thought about quitting my job once or twice.
but that's the advantage to turkey hunting, too, is the fact that they're moving all day. So you may not see anything till noon, but you don't know that at 12:30 something's not going to come walking.
You always have the chance that something's going to wander into where you're sitting if you have the patience to sit still.
Just one,
you know, just to put in the time and to, what's the word I'm looking for? Have the perseverance and the patience just to tough it out and to hope that your instincts are better to sit still than what your restlessness is telling you to get up and move.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, that third property, that last time of the day, that ADD got the best of me, man.
Well, you're frustrated.
You know,
you've been out there.
As a first-time hunter, calling that first bird in and not getting the shot.
Right.
It was depressing.
Sure it is.
You know, it was a little bit disheartening. And there was a couple times where I thought, you know what, I should just pack my shit and go home.
Yeah.
And Ray, right before my first hunt, my first day, he told me, he's like, dude, just put the time in.
Right.
You put the time in, good things happen. So I just kept hearing that, you know, like, just put the time in. So I spent 12 hours Saturday in the woods, 10 hours Sunday in the woods.
Talking to you at the beginning of the season, we talked about what a success your season would be if you just got to see a bird, let alone you called one in, and it was a nice tom to boot.
Yeah.
And the lesson that you learned from that, killing that bird, you know, it's invaluable information, because you'll take that, and next time you go in the woods and you get an opportunity at a time like that, you'll remember that first time.
What really sucked about that one, that was Wednesday.
Right.
Thursday, I didn't get to the woods because of work. So I go out Friday. I went right to the same place where I'd set up at.
Right.
And that was that picture I showed you. That was actually, it wasn't a nest. That was his skeleton. It looked like a coyote something got him.
Oh,
so that was even worse.
Well,
somebody got my turkey.
Well, I can. That particular property you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, there's thick. Yeah, there's coyotes out there.
They are everywhere.
I was telling Brent that, 2-3 weeks before.
I'm sorry, so you haven't called me Brent like 10 years.
I know. Like two, three. Well, I just. I say Bert, and he don't know who Bert is, but. But I was telling Bert, 2-3 weeks before. It was actually, you know, time to get in the woods.
Right.
I was out there scouting this, and there was coyote tracks everywhere.
Right, which, without getting too far into it, somebody else saw a couple coyotes this turkey season, too. Apparently, it's a fairly prevalent thing. If you're calling in a turkey, sometimes you call in coyotes. Have you had that experience?
Never heard of that.
Really?
Nope, never heard of that. I could see how it could happen, but I've never heard of it or known anybody that's encountered it.
Since it's happened to you, I've talked to a couple other people, buddies of mine, that have told me the same thing, that hunting turkeys is one of their best times to kill
Brewer
coyotes.
Mentioned that, remember? Yeah. He said he had to happen once every other year. So
right.
He had a couple come in.
It just,
guy I worked with told me the same thing. He's like, don't be too discouraged, man. He said I had pretty much the same thing happen to me a couple years ago.
Okay, well, yeah. I guess I'm in the story number one, because the first property I hunted that opening morning, Ray wasn't there for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yours truly missed a coyote. I mean,
should have called your brother.
You fucking bastard. What he's talking about. All right, so we got to back way up. So I was like 18.
Yeah, that was years ago.
Yeah.
I still mess with you, obviously.
That was like right when I first met Al. sorry, I had indigestion or something. We were working at the same place, and anyway, so I was young. We were at my dad's for, I think, his birthday or something. It was in February. I mean, the coyotes were yipping and they were just going nuts. It was that time of year, you know, early March, whatever it was. And two of them ran across the field. We're standing in the living room. Oh, shit. Let's grab the rifles. Let's do this. So my brother, being the control freak he is, comes up with this plan. The plan was, I just knew I had to shoot the coyote that was laying down. No big deal. Laying down.
Yeah.
The coyote was laying down. It was a 60-yard shot, no problem for the weapon I had. No problem. My dad's, it was my dad's weapon, actually. And my brother took my dad's 300, and I square up on this thing. Bobby gives me the whistle. He's ready.
Right.
I see the snow. I got the crosshairs on him, and the snow flies up. Like the bottom line on the crosshair, like I don't know how far in front of him it was, but it was a couple feet. I'm like, you gotta be shitting me! It gets up and takes off,
right
towards my brother. The first one came across, and he missed, and then the second one came across, which is the one I missed,
right?
And that was the one that we ended up getting in. Yeah, so that's the joke Al's referring to is. Like my brother had to shoot my coyote.
My brother shot one that he missed.
Bad at cleanup for you on that round.
Yeah. Well, I missed the shit out of this one, too, on the same property. And this one, you hear me talk about the stick and the string and the time you got to spend with it, and I do a lot. Now, I didn't take my rangefinder out with me to my parents' house because I was hunting from my deer stand, so I know the yardage.
All of these are valuable lessons that we
valuable lessons, very valuable. The first mistake I made, I might add, was I ordered new broadheads.
Yeah.
No.
Did you practice with the new broadheads?
I really, honest to God, like I've shot a lot of broadheads. They're not all that different.
Right.
I mean, usually your arrow flies the same.
Sure.
This coyote came in, and as much as I was all over their jock in episode 4. It was just instinct. I was calling turkeys, I was yelping, and this thing sure as shit came in. And I had him at 30 yards. Her at 30 yards. And I was like, I'm not going to mess with it. And then it peed. It squatted.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a female. My dad's not a big fan of these things.
Right.
The neighbors aren't a big fan of these things. So I'm like, all right, well, let's just take a pop at her. At this point, she's, to my estimate, 50 yards out.
Okay.
So I put my last pin on her, let it fly, and I had to miss her by an inch, just above her shoulder, just above.
Which, sadly, when you miss, it could be an inch or it could be a mile. It's the same. Either way you go.
Yep, it's same result.
Same result, yep.
In fact, a close miss is always harder to do.
I'll say this, though. At least it was a clean miss.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I really would have felt like shit if that had hit that thing bad and it took off.
Chuck, how long have you been hunting? You say you're still kind of green at it. Is this a new thing for you? Or
I started, the first time my son-in-law and I went to Missouri was in 2001.
Okay.
But then we didn't hunt again until 2013.
Oh, wow.
And 2013 we went to Nebraska, then came home, and I shot, and we got birds in Nebraska. And then we came home, and he called in my first Eastern for me here over Bristol, and I shot it from, he called it in from about 250 yards across the field.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. and I shot it, and then 14 and 15, I don't think we took trips, and then last year we went to Kansas. I actually went to Kansas twice, never got a bird in 6 days of hunting Kansas. And then this year, last year I started calling for myself in May, and once I started calling for myself, I wasn't relying on anybody else to be able or have to go with me.
Right.
So I've been out this year. Geez, I've been to Florida. I've been to Kansas. I've been to Michigan. I've been to Indiana. And Indiana, I probably hunted.
Just kicking ass.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 days in Indiana I've hunted with my wife or by myself. And
how long has your wife been doing it? Is she going?
This is her first year.
Awesome.
Yeah, this is her first year. She's been out. Well, she was out 3 days, three times in Florida, and then she's been out, I think, three times here.
How's she feel about it? Is it something she enjoys doing?
She loves it. Yeah, loves it. And it's kind of one of those, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
You know, going turkey hunting has been my one, I can get out in the woods, sit by myself all day if I want to, and have peace and quiet.
You know, I know exactly what you mean. Just this last year, my fiance and I decided that she wanted to come with me deer hunting. So I used to tell her, I'll take you with me, huh? No problem, because I knew that she'd say no. And this year she said, oh, I'd love to go. And I thought, what did I get myself into? This is my one little piece of paradise, and now she's going to be a part of it. But it ended up being a really good thing for us, and I'm all about getting anybody involved in hunting, but especially females that don't have any experience about it beforehand, or children, you know, anybody that would be a better advocate for it than I, because I can talk for days about how awesome I think hunting is until people get tired of hearing it. But for some reason, if she talks about it, people pay attention.
I thought she'd go two or three times and say, okay, enough's enough. I'm done.
That's what I was hoping for too, but
it didn't happen. It's now she's already, you know, well, you know, when can we go again? And
right.
Can I hunt Michigan? And,
yep.
You know, can I hunt New York when we go out there? And yeah.
It's a double-edged sword because you want her to be a part of the process, but at the same time, she's kind of encroaching on, you know, your thing a little bit. But I think that's really awesome that you got your wife involved in it and that you're doing it even, you know, giving it a shot.
If anything else, she knows where you're coming from when you're like, eh.
Right.
I got to go. Kill this Miriam over here in Wyoming.
Yeah. Well, and when I talked about Wyoming, I talked to her about it, and she said, well, you know, I said, hey, I got a chance for my Grand Slam in a year.
Right.
It's not really something I set out to do. It just kind of worked out the way.
Mm-hmm.
She was, oh, you got to do that. You got to do that. So it makes it easier to justify spending the money to
yes,
go.
Yes, absolutely. Especially if you got your own personal sort of fan club back home telling you that, you know, get out there, honey, go on, get at it. That's awesome.
Yep, that's really the way it's worked out.
That's super cool.
And Miriam's, man, they're kind of my favorite to look at. They're cool looking. That fan looks awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty bright.
And I don't know why. Is there more to them than what? Because what I see, the first thing that sticks out is that white on the fan.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I don't know why that's so attractive, but I think that's awesome. But they have some more color differences too in the body too, right?
Yeah, but they're all minor. The biggest thing is the cream or the white on their tails is the biggest thing. And they say, now I'm not familiar enough with them for this, but their beards are shorter and their spurs are shorter because of the habitat they live in with all the rocks and stuff.
Speaking of
that, they're wearing that stuff down.
Which makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of beards and spurs, what's your biggest turkey?
I've got an 11-inch beard. I took on a bird last year in Michigan.
Okay.
And I think the biggest bird I ever shot, I was too stupid to know I should weigh it. And it was a beast. It was a bird it was Eastern that my son-in-law called in for me. And we always refer to it as the Bristol Beast.
Yeah.
And his buddies all say, oh, yeah, the new state record that you never weighed. The bird was huge. And I mean huge. He probably was over 25 pounds. Had, I think, about an inch and a quarter spurs, if I remember right.
Nice.
Had 11-inch beard. Just a gorgeous bird.
So,
but heavy, full, nice bird.
Just
And I never weighed him. The only reason I know the measurements on him is because I had the tail fan mounted.
Right.
And I could, and my taxidermist puts the beard and the spurs on leather that goes around him, so I could measure him off of that. But.
Huh. Now, what's... Like for deer, like there's minimum requirements for like Pope and Young and Boone and Crockett. For turkey,
you have nothing for turkey. You the only place that I'm familiar with that you can register them with is with the National Wild Turkey Federation, and they want a beard length, each spur length, a weight on the bird, and if it's over a certain size for any of the four subspecies, you have to have it signed off on by another member of the National Wild Turkey Federation. You may have to have a certification copy from the scales, but that's only on bigger birds. But any bird you shoot, you can have registered with the National Wild Turkey Federation. And it's really a pretty good deal because it costs you $15, but they send you a nice certificate that you can frame. They send you a pin for each subspecies.
Right.
And then they score them, and you can go on their website. Like I can go on and tell of the birds I've shot for that species, how it ranks by weight, by spur length, by beard length, by a number of factors against the other birds that have been recorded from that state.
That's really cool.
So their scoring's pretty simple.
It's pretty simple.
Just inches.
Yes.
All right.
Now, do you get through the NWTF, do you get a special prize for doing the slam? Is it, do you get a certificate that says I completed the slam in 2018? Or
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't know yet. I
can let you know after your kills.
No, I won't get anything special for having done it in a year.
Right.
But I think they'll send me a gift, or a gift certificate, a certificate for having done it, having completed my slam.
Right. So I know, like, my grandpa, it's a different thing, but, like, when he hunts prairie dogs, if he makes over a 1,000-yard shot, he'll get a plaque that says, you know, a 1,000-yard club or whatever, and his picture with the gun or whatever. I didn't know if it was the same for hunting turkeys. If you get, you know, a special plaque for it, or a picture in a magazine somewhere. Or...
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll call me in 8 weeks.
All right.
Because I turned it in last week. It takes them 6 to 8 weeks to score it and
right.
get everything sent through, and then I'll know. Now, she did, I talked to the gal, and she did say, okay, the system automatically tells me that's something I check for.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming they'll send me a certificate, maybe another pin or something for it.
Right.
But
I hope so. I really do.
Yeah.
You deserve it. If you put in that much work, that's...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we haven't even mentioned, like, this is after some kidney transplants, right?
I've had 2 kidney transplants.
Oh, my goodness.
Had the first one back in 93, and then I had it for 23, 24 years, and I wore it out. And was in kidney failure again in 2016, was on dialysis for a couple months, and I got a living donor transplant from a gal I used to work with by the name of Ann Yeoman from St. Louis.
Wow.
And it's been a phenomenal kidney.
That's a hell of a gesture.
Yeah.
Benefit, yeah.
Shout out to, what'd you say, Ann?
Ann Yeoman. I posted on Facebook that I was going to have another kidney transplant. And 5 minutes later, she said, hey, I'll give you a kidney. I only need one. And
that's
awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, that's, there is good in this world.
Yeah,
that makes it feel pretty good, man.
And on top of that, he just negated any argument you have for not getting out into the woods.
Absolutely. Right.
And
you
feel
like
shit.
You don't have time, or you know, you don't feel like you're doing. This man's had 2 kidneys transplanted. He still goes out.
He's on his third kidney, and he's about to get a slam.
Yeah.
So I mean, just number. I mean, how many actual? Just how many birds have you shot already this year?
This year I've got the Osceola, a Rio. Just 4.
Just 4.
I say just 4. If I get a bird in Wyoming and a bird in New York, that's darn near as many as I've got. I mean, I've only got 10 since
right.
I started turkey hunting.
Right.
I called in 1.5 and didn't get any.
Right. So you're doing all right, man.
But you'll always remember that bird you called in and didn't shoot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know. That's the way I was raised. If you're... If when you pull that trigger, if you're not making a clean kill, then you have no business pulling that trigger.
Right.
And he was giving me, like I said, he showed his tail feathers. He wasn't giving me anything that I could do anything with. And
sure.
He won. Right. You know, I'd rather have that. I can live with that. Than if I shot him, and he got away.
Yeah.
And even had you shot and got him, you'll remember. That memory of that bird getting
mm-hmm.
away from you
mm-hmm.
more than you will a dead bird.
Absolutely.
Dude, that's funny. Even with deer. I remember the ones that got away sometimes more, you know.
Well, as he was saying that, in my mind is flashing through the first deer I ever shot that I never got to recover that totally transformed the rest of my hunting experience
exactly.
after that. Because the lesson that you learned from even not shooting at an animal, you know, to this day, in the woods before I pull the trigger on an animal, all that stuff is in my head playing back to me, you know, reinforcing that what I'm out there to do is to make a good ethical clean kill and to be the best hunter I can be and to not repeat those same mistakes that I've made before, because that's part of just living in general is learning from the mistakes that you made and being a better person. Everybody's gonna mess up, and whether it's hunting or in life or whatever, you know, learning from what you do and being a better person on the back side of that is what makes us the superior species, I think. It's what puts us at the top of the food chain, because there's nobody quite...
Sympathy, you know?
Yeah.
Empathy, you know?
Right. All of those things come into play. And hunting is more than just grabbing a gun and going in the woods and smearing some dirt on your face and, you know...
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. We could go to the grocery store and buy our food. We don't need
right.
to go out.
I actually had somebody tell me that on Facebook. I'll just go to Martin's and buy one.
Yeah.
Not the same. Not saying,
and the people that think that, you know, good for them. You know, if that's the way that they want to live, that's fine. And it's nothing against them thinking that. It's not we're better than them or they're better than us.
Right.
It's just a different lifestyle. And that's all there is to it. You know, it takes all types in this life. it takes turkey hunters and trout fishermen and deer hunters, and, you know, not everybody does everything, but everybody can be part of this collective that, that tries to make the world a better place for the rest of us. You know, everybody's working together. We're learning from your experience doing this turkey slam. There are things that I can't even comprehend, like, you know, the Osceola or whatever I know nothing about, but I'm learning from you and sharing my experience with you, and it's all part of this, part of the podcast, really. It's what we're trying to do is spread education and make people want to go do it, and this is a good part of it.
You guys are a great support group, too. Seriously, that's... like, Bert texted me and was like, hey, he's like, you've been talking about hunting, get your turkey license. So he's actually texting me, talking me through what I got to do to get my license.
Right.
Then Adam, I've never been able to read emotion in a text before. When I told him that story of the shot that I didn't take through a text message.
Oh man, I was so fired up.
I could feel him smiling through the phone.
It was awesome to hear that, you know, to know that you saw a bird, because anybody can grab a gun and shoot at something.
Right.
But it's the self-control that you have to have, and the determination to make a good shot and to take your time.
Shot.
Yeah. There's more to hunting, like I said, than just grabbing a gun and going in the woods. You know, it's,
and that's, you know, that's a pretty good segue to why I didn't take a shot at a very nice time. Alright, so I guess Ray probably, he's apparently not gonna make it for the episode.
He's out there somewhere.
Right. Hopefully he walks in, but so like I said, opening morning, first property. All I did was call in that coyote and I missed. So I went up to property number two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this time I'm in the hardwoods, got the mask on, got my diaphragm calling my mouth. I'm calling away. Ray's with me. We heard the first gobble. I texted him. I said, dude, was that a gobble? I said, I think so. I did it again. I'm like, shit. That's awesome.
Right.
So, but that stopped after that. There was like a couple gobbles way off and then nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I just kept kind of calling. I was in a tree stand. I could see where Ray was at, ish.
Yeah.
He was so well camoed. I mean, it was kind of a bitch to figure out where he was, but
good on Ray Cole for camoing upright.
And it, dude, he gives. There he is. Perfect timing. Yes. Bring, come on.
Here.
I literally just said I don't. Apparently, he ain't gonna
make it. Talk about you. I told you he had the chair.
Is it raining?
Yes. Walk off grand slam.
Woo! Are you shitting me?
Carson Rachel, the smallest kid on our team, did a grand slam at two outs, won the game, walk off.
Like, out of the park? Or
yes,
like in
the park? Center field, over the fence.
Holy shit.
Congratulations.
Bring your ass over here, brother. Take your gun out. This is Charles Chuck Gooding.
I wasn't sure who was going. I thought you
were going. Oh, you're
oh, so you guys going already.
Party for yeah.
Oh.
I'm gonna grab beer and I'm gonna grab beer.
Come on, team, so we got a rake, too. Oh, shit. I was just starting to tell him. I just told him how I missed the coyote out of my parents' house. And, they,
And I got beer.
Oh, shit.
I want you to feel alone.
Everybody take the guns out.
Why start the truck to the store?
Anyway, so, yeah. You and Alex here. So... I missed the coyote at my parents' house. We went out to Phil's, and I told him when we heard the first couple gobbles.
It's over,
he just wants a beer. Give me something cold and wet. No, I need another one, matter of fact.
Heard the first couple gobbles,
and then we didn't hear anything for a while. I just kept calling, and then all of a sudden I heard one little cluck. And it was from the other direction behind me, and I turn around, there's four Jakes coming down this hill. Ooh, shit. And we had the decoys set up, if I remember right, they were all, the Jake and both the hens were kind of like between me and you.
We said one had one Jake. We only had two.
Only brought two out there? Yeah, okay. Yeah, whatever it was, but it was kind of...
Yeah, they were like in a triangle. They were the point.
Right.
Like a pyramid.
So we figured whichever way they came in, one of us will have a shot.
Right.
So
I was off probably, what, 30 yards, and I don't know how close you were to the decoys.
About 35 yards, yeah.
He was just telling us that you did a great job wearing camo because he could hardly see you from his tree stand. He said he lost you kind of once you were...
Until I stuck my dumb ass head around the tree.
Watch his exact...
I got busted.
Well, yeah, exactly. These jakes are coming down. And I have at one point like 25 yards broadside. And I remember thinking, I had my mask on. I had the diaphragm call in my mouth, but I was trying to figure out where I need to put it to draw back. Because anybody that's an avid bow hunter knows that you have anchor points.
Right.
You know, and I use a kisser for the corner of my mouth. And I remember thinking, like, fuck, where the hell am I going to put this thing?
Right.
I didn't practice with it. Mistake number two.
There you go. That's You're over the same things. Yeah, we're preaching about.
Just because we host a podcast doesn't mean we're perfect.
No, we're so, humans just like the rest of them, you know.
But at one point I had them like 25, 30 yards, something like that. I had a really clear shot, but they were heading right towards the decoys, and the direction they're headed, I was going to have like a 15-yard shot at one of them. There was one of them looked. I'd shoot a Jake. First turkey with a bow. I wasn't gonna sweat it.
My philosophy in the woods is, if you're going out there to harvest an animal, you never pass an animal up on the first day that you take on the last day.
You never do it. So.
And I was thinking the opposite. I'm like, well, this is the first day of a week,
right.
So.
Right. I've learned fine. That lesson before. I played that.
Let
game.
Bert get one first. And when he gets his, then.
Yep.
Well, how'd that work out? Because. Well, they're coming down, and I could tell, bro. Like a.
You struck out, didn't you?
Oh, I
struck. Coyote was strike one.
Yeah, so these fuckers are coming down, and before they get to the easy shot, Ray sticks his head around the the log where he was at.
Yeah.
This is the part where he throws me under the bus. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to throw myself under the bus like a motherfucker here in a minute. So they see Ray, and they start kind of angling off, you know, and I'm like, oh, shit, they're getting nothing but farther away now.
Right. Like, busted Ray.
Yeah. So I'm like, shit.
Well, what happened? I'm looking over. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, I was just like, well, go ahead. You know,
I'm looking over my shoulder. I see them coming down. I have no idea. There's a Tom, the only Tom of the bunch.
The gobbles
coming
we heard.
Right at me.
The one that away shut up them. Was on his way in. Right. So I'm in the tree stand, and all of a sudden I heard, it sounded like something out of a Dr. Seuss movie.
Yeah.
And this thing goes,
I see him. He took off.
I just seen a blue head.
Brought the gun up and it was gone.
Yeah, because he, like, from my angle, looked like he was, like, 10 yards from me, or 10 or 15, yeah, he was close.
15 to 20, probably.
But he never seen him, and then, boom, he was taken off.
And I'm like, oh, God. Chuck, so then I turned around the tree, and that's when I got busted by the jakes, right, too. So I was just out there, and I was like, shit. Dumbass.
Well, so they're angling off, leaning out the tree, right underneath. I'm going, oh, shit. It took one hop. Left me another shot.
Yeah.
Fucking A, here we go.
Put another arrow in.
Knocked one up. A little bit higher this time. And then, I as I was hitting that trigger, those things are hard to stop, I realized. They're not like deer. We can be like, hey!
Right.
They just keep moving.
Yeah.
So it took like two steps before that arrow even got there, so I missed that one. And that shot, that, out of all the misses you guys are about to hear, that shot felt the best.
And it was the closest. It's a bigger
out of all the misses.
That one felt. I mean, that shot was on the money. He just moved. So that was that for my misses for day one. And I already told him how we went out to Eric's, and then my ADD got the best of me. And
yeah, we, hopping around
when we moved.
Yep.
And that time I ended up shutting the hell up, and we were done. So then, what was the next day? Went out. It was I took Thursday off of work. Okay, so I was out by myself. I snuck out to the woods on property number two, which is one, the first one Ray was hunting with me, with the Tom and the Jakes. And it was like 3 in the afternoon or something. I heard a gobble, and it was like right there, right over the hill. You weren't out there with me Thursday.
No, my season started and ended Monday because I called in land, yeah, and I was there the rest of the week. And then I had baseball tournaments and volleyball tournaments the weekend for the kids, so I didn't make it out again.
That's
right. You got to hunt one day out of your whole season?
Yes. Yeah.
That's rough.
That's what's like, well, the season runs. The season runs from Monday to Sunday.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
They don't even give you two whole weekends. It's just, right, Monday to Sunday.
You get your slam in a year when you retire.
So anyway. So
you're lucky.
This bird's close to
real
shit.
Real lucky.
Yeah.
And this was my... I'm hearing leaves crunching, and I look up, and this thing's strutting, big rope dragger, just coming down the hill, right at the decoy, and right for the Jake. See, this time when I set up, I was like, man, I want to have whatever direction they come from, I want them to see a decoy. So I set up one hand over here, one hand over here real close, and then this Jake was the farthest decoy from me, about 30-ish yards.
Okay.
And this thing comes in right for the Jake. Like, dude, and he was taking his time. Taking his time the entire way. Hopped over a log. Gets right where I want him. I draw back. I got away with it.
Yeah. Snuck one in.
Right. Yeah, I got away with that. So I drew back. Put that pin on him. Down and to the left. Right underneath his ass.
What happened?
Well, he hopped up. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I just missed that shot. All right. Drew back again.
I got two on him.
Same exact spot, down to the left, missed. Wing missed, and then he took off. And I'm like, what in the hell?
Did you drop your bow?
No. So at this point, I'm in the tree stand contemplating.
Did you throw it?
Like, right. I'm like, fuck it. You know, I had it in the back of my truck, driving all these properties and back and forth. I know.
Right.
I didn't have a case, so I'm sure maybe, if anything, maybe the sight got bumped. But I do it all the time at deer season, and it's fine.
Yeah.
So I was confused. I'm like, oh, maybe it did get bumped. So then I'm sitting up there, and another gobbler starts doing his thing and working his way in. I'm like, shit. Okay. As I start getting ready, I see him. Well, I had an ant or something. There was a bug on my arm.
Oh, no.
And I went like this, and I look up, and about 55 yards away, this thing was just staring right at me. And I couldn't tell he was so far away, but I'm sure his beak weenus or whatever the hell he wanted his snood. Yeah, was all shorted because he.
Right.
Do their heads change color, by the way, depending on mood? Okay, because his was bright red. What does that mean? He was.
They'll go red and white.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep. With some blue on there.
Oh, okay. Anything to do with mood, or they just.
Well, they say they. I've heard. I'm not expert enough to tell you this for a fact, but they say when they're white, they're just calm. They're just walking through the woods or looking to breed.
Right.
Something like that. When they start changing colors is when they start getting fired up.
A little agitated.
A little agitated, yeah.
Like a mood ring.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, because the one that ran away from you, that one was like the color of Al's shirt. It was blue. Yeah. And this one was bright red.
The one that dug me was white.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I've also heard when their head turns white, they're alarmed that something's got them alarmed.
Huh.
So I don't know what the reality is. And it's, you know, it's like a lot of things. There's billions of opinions out there, depending on what you've seen or what you've experienced.
It could be specific to your experience, you know. Get out in the woods and try it.
Well,
figure it out.
Well, when this thing came in, though, he wouldn't come any closer. And I didn't even try it. I had a clear shot at him, but I was like, at this point, I don't know if my bow was off.
Right.
What the hell? I was convinced I just wanted it to go away.
Shakes
so I could get down and get out of there because I didn't even want to take a shot at him.
Shakes your confidence a little bit.
I was pissed, dude. And that one I missed twice was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, that was a big time.
Right.
And that's a shot I should be able to make all
like
day
Mr.
long.
Like Mr. T. Right, drag that.
All day long I should make that shot. So I got, as soon as that time left, I got down cussing at myself. That was the last opportunity I won. Yeah, that was the last opportunity I had to hunt on a Monday and Thursday. I think I went on Saturday for a couple hours, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then I went home and I'm like, what the hell? So I thought the bow was off, put the field tips on.
Right.
Shot. Boom.
Dead nuts on.
Dead nuts. Put the broadhead on. Dead nuts. So what the hell? Put my mask on.
Uh-oh.
Couldn't get a 5-inch grouping from 30 yards.
Really? Have you tried practicing with the mask on?
Nope. That... Mistake number three.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. No, now,
so pay attention to this.
Tom Pallmonter, if you're listening, you taught us kids. Well, we used to be in bands and stuff, and he always said to practice like you play, you know?
Right.
So that's
the gospel.
Yeah, that is the gospel, because I didn't even think about that till the last minute. Like, shit, maybe I'll put – that's the only thing I do different.
Right.
I don't wear a mask when I deer hunt. I am usually weird about that shit. I don't like anything on my face.
Yeah.
But with turkey hunting, you know, you're camo this, camo that. You need to be
covered up as much as possible.
Yeah.
If you ever see a turkey in the wild, their eyes are so incredibly small But if they can pick you out in a tree from 55 yards away, you have to respect that animal that has such an adapted eyesight. You know, I can't pick out most things in a tree from 55 yards away.
I have trouble reading the letters at the car place.
Right, yeah. So for an animal that spends most of its time in the woods wandering around pecking at the ground and it's got the brain the size of a pea or the size of a peanut, you know, you have to respect the fact that it's in its element when you're out there chasing after it. And you learn the hard way that sometimes it's a little easier to talk about it than it is to actually do it in terms of fooling their eyesight.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no shit, bastards. But so basically I started the season with 4 arrows, ended the season with 2 arrows and no turkeys.
And a hell of a story to tell.
And 1 dead coyote. We forgot to mention that. I did pop a second coyote the opening morning.
Okay.
Hit that one.
Well, at least you didn't get completely skunked.
Yeah, well, that was weird, too, because the way he was only 10 yards out.
Yeah.
Heading right for the decoys with the bow.
It was coming to me.
Yeah.
I had that box called. I don't know if I sounded like a wounded animal or what, trying to call a turkey or
something. Like a dying turkey.
Yeah. Right.
Now, you said you didn't see him, though, when he was coming in, though, right?
Until after the thud.
Yeah, after the...
Yeah.
He rolled after I got him, right. Now... We didn't recover him, but I mean,
you can hear it.
The reason that coyote got shot was it was on a special request from the landowner. They've been messing with their horses and they got all kinds of livestock out there. Yeah. So that was a no brainer.
Coyotes tend to be. I've never heard anybody say, "Oh, I love coyotes." You know.
And Al, the last day I took you out there, I called another one in.
Bert did one of the episodes.
Yeah, now, that's different.
We're getting ready to wrap this thing up, but on special request, you wanted me to talk about cooking these things, which I'm curious too, because you know, Brewer said wrap them in bacon and smoke them, which is awesome. But
always good advice.
But I got a text from Chuck the other day that,
right?
And I quote, "I just made a batch of turkey nuggets that gave me a boner."
You sent that to me, and I said, "You know, I'll put that meat in my mouth. That sounds like something I'd enjoy eating." Good stuff.
What's easiest way stuff? To make them? You just take the breast,
right?
You cut them into nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Roll them in. I roll mine in frying magic, but there's another one out there, a Colonel something or other frying mix, Kentucky Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
You roll them in that. Take a glass pan, spray it, put them in there, and bake them in the oven at 350 for about 10-15 minutes. Unbelievable.
Now, what size nuggets do you do? Are you talking like a 1 to 2 inch piece of meat or just a...
About the size of a chicken McNugget. Okay. Yep, about the size of chicken McNugget.
Nice.
Nothing to it. Takes about 10 minutes to prep them, throw them in the just oven.
Simple breading.
Now, yep. I invite all of you who have one in the freezer ready to try this because this is what I was wanting to try if one of us killed a bird. But for Christ's sake, between the two kids, Al, me, Ray, nobody shot one.
Right.
So, but... this is a recipe. It actually started with chicken. Just Italian dressing. Pour in a pan. Put your chicken breast in there, right, or whatever you're doing. Cover it up with tin foil. Put it in the oven for 400 for 45 minutes or whatever. And dude, that is chicken breast, awesome. So right. Then I did this with squirrel. Because everybody knows how tough squirrel meat is, mm-hmm. if you've never eaten it. I mean, it's good meat, but it's tough. Kind of chewy.
Right.
You cook it like that. In Italian dressing, covered up, 45 minutes at 400 or 375-ish, somewhere in there.
Just keep an eye on it.
Yeah, just definitely keep an eye on it. But you will just suck the meat right off the bone. Right.
The way I did in a roast bag.
Yeah.
With that pheasant.
Oh, yeah.
That I brought over.
Yeah,
that pheasant. The way I do awesome. The chicken breast with the Italian dressing, I marinate it for 24 hours.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. You can marinate it, too. But even if you were in a hurry, just throw it in there. I wonder how the turkey breast would taste like that. Because it's kind of... I've heard it's kind of... It's not your butterball, right? It's all dark meat, kind of dry.
I don't find wild turkey breast meat to be much different than a regular domestic turkey, than a store-bought turkey.
Do you take the legs off the turkeys in the wild, too, or do you just stick to the breast?
The first 2 or 3 years we hunted, all we did was cut out the breast.
Okay.
We had somebody tell us, you need to take the
breast,
legs and
legs.
Thighs and do it in soups or stews or stuff like that. I've got a recipe for, it was actually a wild goose and wild rice recipe that a guy gave me years and probably 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've converted it now and put I take the thighs and the drums, put them in the crock pot overnight.
Okay.
And then pull all the tendons out of them because they're full of tendons.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard part about eating a turkey leg like that. Even a domestic turkey. If the legs are my favorite part because I'm a dark meat fan myself, but the tendons in it tend to ruin the experience. And the wild turkeys, I've noticed, the ones that I've had, I don't know if they're more full of tendons or just less full of meat.
They're packed full of tendons.
Yeah.
But once you put it in the crock pot overnight, those things just pull right out. Right. And you just shred the meat or cut it into small pieces.
Right.
And then I take a box of Uncle Ben's wild rice and make that and take the turkey breast meat and make a roux with milk and flour.
Oh, yeah.
What's a roux?
Milk and flour.
It's equal parts milk and flour, or just fat and flour.
I've never heard that term before.
It's a thickener, basically, right?
Yeah. You melt the butter, and then you start adding the flour.
Very slowly.
And you mix that in, and then you've got a thick, like a paste, and then you put, I put a cup of chicken broth and a half cup of milk in.
Right.
And make like almost like a gravy or a sauce.
Right.
And then you take that, the turkey meat, and the wild rice. Mix it all together until it's mixed up and throw it in the oven at 325 about a half hour. It's unbelievable. I can make, I've got a 1 1/4 quart casserole dish, and I can make that, and whatever isn't eaten as a side dish, my oldest daughter will take and she'll finish it the next day.
Sorry, my mouth's watering right now.
It's excellent.
Hearing about this.
It is good.
Oh.
You don't have any of the gaminess. You know, you'd think wild turkey's game. It's got to be gamey. It's not at all.
Right. A lot, and we talked about it too in the butchering episode and the cooking episode, a lot of how you handle the meat determines and how the meat tastes. A lot of people don't like wild game because they think it's too gamey, they think it's too wild. But a lot of people that think that haven't had it prepared in a way that really pays proper respect to the animal or to the meat that you're cooking, because any of that meat is just as good as any other meat you can get. You just maybe have to have a special consideration for it at one point or another to kind of help deal with that kind of stuff.
And it's like superfood, man. I can do, like, venison.
Yeah.
I eat some venison steak or a venison burger, or I put venison in my hamburger helper or sloppy joes, whatever. Right. The next day, I can feel a physical difference in the way I'm dead serious. Like, I feel,
just, you know, better about eating good. The meat. To me, I think it, there's a special
amount of
pride.
Nutritional value, I think.
Right. There's more pride I take, like, if I harvest the animal and then cook it myself and sit down and eat it, and I know that I grew the stuff in my garden and I harvested the animal during the season and I did everything the right way, you know, it's hard to replace that feeling. You can't go to the store and buy the meat and feel the same way about it, because this is something that you put the time in, the energy, the effort, the butchering. You know,
like we said before, you almost remember the misses more than or the close encounters more than you do the harvest.
The whole experience is just. That's what I love about hunting, is that there's not a particularly wrong way to do it. There's a lot of different ways that you can do it, with the end game. Yeah, the end game being that you are successful in your hunt, and you use that, whatever you decide to harvest, to feed your family, to feed yourself, to educate somebody else with. You know, it's the name of the game for us is going to be education until we get too old to do it, because that's the only thing that's going to keep this sport alive. And there's so many people actively trying to limit our use of guns, our time in the woods, the animals that we can hunt even. You know, there's a big push to keep people like us from doing the things that we enjoy, because it offends other people's idea of what we should be doing. All we should be doing is surviving.
I spent a week out there for the first time, and I can't wait to get
back. I was just going to say, so I don't get, like, so... What's everybody's take on turkey hunting, man, for the newbies? Because I love it.
Oh, I can't wait to get back out.
It sounds like it's something that's going to take some time.
It's a good cure for the spring fever, or the cabin fever. You know, from all winter long, like deer season's over, you're just kind of
the ice comes off the lake. You kind of got some time. You know, fishing comes to close. Small game shuts down basically. And what are you going to do?
Well, kind of a shitty part, but also a lesson learned. The last days in the woods, I actually figured out where they're roosting at.
Yeah.
So hopefully next season, if they're in the same area, I'll have a different story to tell.
Even now, what you could do if you're not hunting anymore is put on your camo and go out and just sit. You don't have to have a gun with you to do it. You know, you can
camera.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking earlier when he showed up. He's like, all I've been thinking about since Sunday is getting back on the woods. I'm like, hey,
You can go in the woods.
I've kind of been contemplating going up back out to the property and seeing if I can't pull that damn coyote that ate my turkey.
There you go. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do.
Seriously, though, it sounds like they need to do some trapping over there.
They need to do something, dude. They're thick. Well, when I told you I was seeing...
It's right by a swamp.
Yeah, when I told you I was seeing tracks, I mean, it was... Like, you've been there. You know the property.
Oh, yeah.
From where you come in, you know, when you first drive up and you see the swamp and it branches off to the left, I saw coyote tracks there. I saw more tracks on the side over here, and then back by the cabin, there was more tracks over there by the swamp, by the cabin, and on the back.
It's almost a small lake, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like they need to call Chuck Powell.
That's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's funny. I was thinking that because I was listening to the podcast. That's what I do in my spare time. And, I was like, man, I wonder if that guy could get out there and trap them.
Yeah, I'm sure he could. He's very good at it.
Yeah,
we'll learn that.
Well, on that note, though, I love turkey. Turkey hunting is, I said it at the end of Brewers episode, you know, man, I almost love it more than deer hunting, but now I'm thinking back, I mean, yeah, deer hunting is just...
It's just a different, it's a different
animal. But it is game. So much fun. That spring thunder, dude, that is the shit. That first gobble I got, and then, you know, just the whole experience. It's just,
when that bird gobbled and he wasn't 30 feet.
Player or position, point guard, Russell Westbrook, center.
Sorry, that was funny. Thanks, Siri.
No, Siri.
That bird wasn't 30 feet away from me when he gobbled. I could feel it in my chest, and my adrenaline just shot through the roof.
Gives you goosebumps.
It was awesome.
Sorry, I'm the only one that thinks it's funny that my Siri went off when I said thunder.
It's thundering outside right now.
I didn't do it now, but...
No. I thought it was funny. We were talking about turkeys, and Siri said Russell Westbrook.
Yo.
All right. Funny. Chuck, thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
This was an awesome time.
Thank you very much for your time.
And good luck on that, dude.
I look forward to hearing
about this. We need to hear about this.
Yeah, you got to let us know.
Well, you're on Facebook. You'll see it on there.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
We'd love to have you back out, too. We're going to have to do a little update here.
Follow-up episode, or just give us an update sometime. And
let me know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely let us know if they do give you a certificate or anything for that. Because that's awesome.
Absolutely. All right, boys and girls, we'll talk to you next time.
All right, everybody, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Quick update, Chuck did indeed shoot his Miriam in Wyoming, so congratulations, Chuck. That's one hell of an accomplishment. Hopefully I'll get you guys a picture that I'll put up on our Rex Bird and Feather Facebook page so you guys can check out his bird. Or follow us on Twitter at RFF Podcast. Shoot us an email with any questions, comments, criticism, whatever you got. Shoot them at us at rexfurandfeathers@gmail.com. Just a quick reminder, at the end of July, we're going to be sitting down with Kevin Swanson, who's the Michigan DNR's Bear and Wolf Program Specialist. So if you guys have any questions that you want us to ask him, make sure you shoot him at us. Next week, we'll be sitting down with our buddy Ryan Johnson, and then you guys will get to hear about some more embarrassing shit from old Burrs and Bullseye Burt here. So, all editing is done by the great and powerful Kyle Palmoner, as always. All music and artwork done by Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com and the Root Note Podcast. Everybody, stay safe, stay cool, and we'll talk to you next time.